Hopefully no.
What do you think about the direction, first of all, of Hamas and then the direction of Israel? I don't think Sharon is coming back into the picture.
Sharon, firstly, we pray for him as a human being, and he also has some very, very great accomplishments and achievements for Israel and the Jewish people. And, you know, it's always painful when anybody is ill.
You know, it's interesting to see what has happened to all of the Israeli prime ministers who have surrendered territory. It's just interesting. Which, of course, is exactly what Pat Robertson said, but, well, there it is.
I absolutely do. I absolutely do. And you know what? I think that people have to be blind, deaf, and dumb, and stupid not to see it. What can I say? We have people in Israel who are from the old socialist school, and then we have other people who are from the capitalist globalist school. And, hey, listen, it's the almighty dollar, and it's the oil, and it's the economy. You know, Bill Clinton used to say, hey, it's the economy, stupid. And there's tremendous pressure being brought to bear on the Israeli leadership from Washington and from Europe and from the United Nations. So Israeli leaders are kind of crushed by the world globalists. And if they're not religious people, which they're not going to understand it. What's happening today in the Middle East with the Arabs and with the Hamas. All of this is a war of religion. It's a war between God and Satan. Listen, the Israeli economy is growing at 5.5%, which is unsurmounted in any Western country. This is all thanks to Benjamin Netanyahu, who resigned a few months ago just before the withdrawal from Gaza. Tourism is back to where it was 4 or 5 years ago before the Intifada. Things theoretically are going very well in Israel now. And the Palestinians, who keep staying over on the verge of destroying Israel, they have 70% unemployment. The people are starving to death. Hamas is winning because Hamas is feeding the people. But Hamas has said the moment they win the elections on January 25th, they're going to break off all contact with the Israelis. So the Hamas are kind of crazy, too, because Gaza and the West Bank cannot live without being in some way connected with Israel. So, you know, we're dealing with some very mentally retarded people. And the mental retardation is as a result of what is known as Islam.
The Palestinian elections are going forward.
The American State Department is adamant that this happened, and the American State Department even is forcing Israel to allow the Palestinians in East Jerusalem to vote. What Israel was saying, yeah, they can vote, but they have to go to Abu Dis, which is about, you know, just on the other side of the barrier of a wall. No, the Israeli government has to allow them to vote into the post office. That's what, in Jerusalem, that's what the American government is forcing Israel to do. The elections are going to go forward. Israel will not be the reason if for postponement of the election.
And Hamas will probably be put in.
Hamas will get a very large percentage, and I would say up to 50%. And in Gaza, they will be the majority. And like I said before, they're going to break off all negotiations with Israel until Israel's destroyed. Again, you know, these people are living in a pipe dream. They're on cloud 11 or something. They're not with their feet on the ground. They really don't understand. They really believe Israel will be destroyed. And a very important thing I wanted to share on your show is that not only does Ahmadinejad say that Israel should be wiped off the face of the earth, so does the Palestinian leadership. And you know what? The Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, that had 20% of the vote in the Egyptian parliament a few weeks ago, they said in the next elections they are sure of victory. And when the Muslim Brotherhood comes to leadership in Egypt, they're going to start a war with Israel again and wipe Israel off the face of the earth.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see if they turn on Israel again in that time, how this is going to go for them in terms of the court of world opinion.
Well, first thing, let me say one thing. George W. is doing the right thing in Afghanistan and in Iraq. But what he's trying to do is being very equivalent about it, saying that the same thing has to happen with the Palestinians. The problem with the Palestinians is that 50% are Hamas and 50% are PLO, and both the Hamas and the PLO call for Israel's destruction. So, you know, when you're talking about democracy, and democracy is a very wonderful thing if you're talking about Judeo-Christian populations that believe in democratic parties. And Republican parties. But when you're talking about the Middle East, you're talking about Islam, which has only one thing on its mind, and it's killing the Jews on Saturday and killing the Christians on Sunday. So I don't know what kind of democracy that is.
Yeah, that image does not come across here in the United States.
I think it was Winston Churchill who said that democratic nations do not attack other democratic nations. So if the bottom line of Islam is attacking Israel and destroying and killing every Jew, then that's not democracy. It's never going to happen.
So everything is about ready to take a different turn.
Yeah, I think things are heating up, and I think that we could be seeing all kinds of stuff happening in Iran, Syria, the Hezbollah, Lebanon, the Palestinians. It will all happen all at once.
Avi, you've been talking about forming...
The views expressed on tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show are the opinions of neither this station nor its sponsors. In fact, they're not necessarily the opinions of Radio Liberty or of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. The views expressed by the host are those of the host. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests are theirs. Whether you agree or disagree, please join in. To participate, you can call during caller segments at 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237. Or you can go to our online audience participation center at www.freedom21santacruz.net/radio. That's freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Now let's start advancing freedom.
Well, good evening, Roy. This is Mike LaShaw with my co-host Roy Avila, the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show. And good evening to America tonight. You know, here in Santa Cruz, we had one of those California Central Coastal days. It was in the 80s, and you could see forever. And
don't make just, people mad at us now.
Well, you know, the earth is a beautiful place, and certainly Santa Cruz is one tremendously beautiful place.
If they would just let it be beautiful.
Well, you know, if people and the earth were free to engage without restrictive dynamics being thrust upon us by the agent of force at every turn and increasing. And, of course, that's our show's focus here at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz show, how our nation is being changed right out from under our nose. And there is a reason and a rhyme to why all of that's happening. And we're going to continue with that subject tonight in our special edition entitled Sociology is a Religion with returning guest Erica Carl. But before we move on to our show, I want to make a couple corrections to the start of last week's first hour show. In it, I described the Monterey National Bay Sanctuary as including 7,000 acres of land. And I was a little confused at the moment, but I wanted to be conservative. In reality, the enforcement divisions that operate under the Monterey Bay Sanctuary have a coverage of land of 7,000 square miles. That's a huge hunk of California. And, of course, last week we talked about the Sierra Conservancy as an example of the regionalization that's going on, which takes up 21 counties in the state of California. But I made a mistake there also. I talked about the Sierra Conservancy as expanding into Nevada and Oregon, and I was incorrect about that. It is the Sierra Business Council that takes up the regional affiliation that cuts across into Nevada and up into the so-called province of Klamath, which extends on into the state of Oregon. So it is the Sierra Business Council, the public-private partnership arm of the Sierra Conservancy, that has that regional affiliation. So with those clarifications, I want to make another reflection also on our recent visit up to Tuolumne County, where Daniel Beckett made a keynote speech to the To Care organization up there. And it's just nice to know that here and there and in more and more places, there are good people fighting both inside and outside government to rise up and bring out this truth. So do the same. Rise up yourself. Do your part. Participate in freedom. And of course, we've got a lot of tools at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz that can help you spread that word. Just check into our website, f21sc.net. And we may get a chance to talk later in the show about the formation of this region's integrated water plan and some interesting mayoral actions, etc., in connection with that. But let's move right along and get to our subject today, which just ties into everything that's so much falling apart in our society and our political system. Tonight our guest is a writer and a researcher. She is known for her book, Give Us the Young, and I'm particularly fond of the Wisconsin Report work that she did some 5 and 10 years ago. We'll be right back here at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz with our special guest, Erica Carr. We're back at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show. Erica, how are you tonight?
I'm fine. How are you?
Well, I'm just wonderful. I thank you so much for being up late on the East Coast to share what's an early warm evening here in the Central Coast of California, from one side to the other, one beautiful nation in between. Well, tell us, Erica, our topic tonight is sociology is a religion. For our audience, we've had a series of broadcasts on reflecting on Auguste Comte, his philosophy of positivism, and his religion of humanity. Comte is the father of sociology. He directed his followers and later generations to implement, I think you've identified 14 points in order to establish a central world domination and a one-world religion.
He had big plans. And I think that people should realize it didn't matter to him that it wasn't going to take place in his lifetime. He expected it to take maybe 200 years to finally complete what he had started out. And he had an idea that he had sort of a bond with the future because his plans would be followed out and people would be living according to what he had decided.
Well, do you think if he were alive today, he'd reflect on the progress from his perspective over 200 years and feel that things were as he hoped or expected them to be?
I think he'd feel it's a little late, like it's taking longer than he thought.
And would that make him nervous?
Would that make him nervous?
Yes.
Well, he was a brilliant man, and if he were alive, he probably would concoct a lot of things to make things happen. I think that while it isn't as far complete as he would have liked it to be, it's a lot more complete than maybe 90% of the people realize what's going on.
Well, I think that's certainly true. And, of course, I know your work for a long time, and mine during this decade anyway has been really dedicated to help spread that information, because more and more people are becoming aware that there's an integrated program here that accounts for what is wrong in our political economic situation and our social and cultural dynamics.
Well, the way people are reacting to this and have been in past years particularly, I am reminded of an apartment I lived in. It was a four-family affair, and the manager or the owner came in and told me about the newlywed couple that lived across from me.
Hold that thought for just a moment, Erica. We'll
sure.
be right back with our rest of our audiences. We're back here at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show with special guest Erica Carl. And while some stations were gone, Erica talked about how Auguste Comte would have expected his plan to be in place in the 200 years since he began assembling that program, and that if he were here today, she thought that he might think that it was running behind schedule.
Well, he'd be a lot happier with his plan than I am.
Well, certainly. I mean, I think he'd have more to be gleeful of than those who want to protect the strengths of liberty, and you know, we have more to worry about.
Do I have time to get back to my little newlywed couple?
Yes, let's.
Okay. The manager came in and he said he couldn't believe it. He went into their apartment and their toilet had overflowed. And he had a mop and a bucket and he was dumping the bucket into the bathtub. And she had a mop and she was crying and crying and sobbing. And the strange part of it is they were mopping and sobbing and mopping and sobbing, and neither one of them thought to shut off the water. And to me, that's about the way people are with sociology. They complain about this is wrong, that is wrong, everything's wrong, but they're not shutting off the sociology. They're manufacturing little sociologists by the thousands every year and training children in sociology by the millions. And unless you shut off the flood of people who are coming into sociology or being trained by sociology, there's no way we can stop any of these other things.
Well, define for us sociology.
Well, Comte defined it as the science of society. And I think you can almost define it by the goals. The goal is to take over each individual nature and rally all the separate individuals to the same thing.
So and eliminate personality and individuality.
Eliminate personality, and also everything, all people are to be affected by the environment, by the outside. They're not supposed to have inner thoughts, conscience within them. What they are allowed to do is be affected by the outside world, but not contribute their inner feelings to that.
So give me an example of how that would relate
to what's going on?
Yeah.
Well, I think one example is how I could go back to last night. I was very much irritated listening to O'Reilly. I think it was last night or the night before. And he was talking about the fact that so many black children were born out of wedlock, and he said, nobody knows why, you can't figure it out. Well, it's not that hard to figure out, because you're training children that they have their own moral code. And it's been over the years that they brought children up and said the highest state is when you develop your own moral code. Well, that's just like saying doing anything you want.
Do what thou willst.
And do it. And these little children are not told, don't do this, don't do that, which is a protection for them. They're just turned out loose with no instruction whatsoever. It's like going at life, but no help. How do you do it?
And you attribute that
Well, that's what they teach them in school, yes.
Okay, the sociologists in school end up inflicting a child with that belief structure.
Taking away all his defense about being safe or doing things wrong or doing things that are stupid. You're not allowed to tell him, don't do this, don't do that. You just tell him that they have to obey the system and they have to dream up their own moral code. And they can't do it. You and I couldn't do it. We were born into a situation where we were instructed what's right and what's wrong. But if the kids don't know what's right and wrong, how are they going to figure out how to raise their own children?
And that's really the message in your Sixth Generation to Serfdom brilliant series that takes quotes from six generations of Comte and his followers, his later generation followers.
Well, you can follow what he set up right up to the present day and see what's happened using his philosophy and his sociology and it's destroying any moral fabric that the country has. And when you look at, they were saying on O'Reilly, the black children, they took it from about 1960, about 25% of the children were born out of wedlock. But if you go farther than that, it's less than 10%. And over the years, with their sex education and their sex instruction, it's now around 75% born without parents being married. And if that doesn't have something to do with the education and with the government interference in their lives, how can you deny it?
Well, many people would argue that the sociologists have taken society to such a debased state that society now is dependent upon the direction and control of government in order to just lead a human life.
Well, everything is governed from the outside of you. We want you to do this, well, we'll give you money to do it. We want you to do this, we'll pat you on the back for doing it. And the things that government wants you to do are not the same things that are good for you. And the system, it is succeeding. I remember when I was in college, I took one sociology course, and one of the things that the students had to do was have a practical situation where they were using the sociological learning. And one thing they did was teach Sunday school in the Christian churches. And I remember thinking at the time, why would they want these people to teach Sunday school? They aren't even members of their church. But the university supplied Sunday school teachers for various churches.
My. Filled with sociologists, I assume.
Right, right. And it's hard for me to understand. There are Christian schools that teach sociology, and they teach the religion of humanity. They don't mind being called a humanitarian, but in its derivation, humanitarianism is the doctrine that denies the divinity of Christ. And
humanitarianism also calls for the unification of all the world's religions, doesn't it? Into
that's right. So
even under such a system that Comte imagines, atheists who are principled individualists would be caught up into the collective catch of mandated thought behavior.
That's right. And you know, with the sociologists, for 150 years, they've known the goal, and they've understood the goal, and they've had instructions on how to reach their goal of a total world dictatorship. In fact, Hitler's, many of his lieutenants and he were very interested in sociology and sociological instruction. They called themselves, I don't know if there's a German thing, but Comte called his people sociocrats, and the government is to be a sociocracy.
Well, certainly the American scene approaches that. Sociologists everywhere measuring everything. I saw in some news release that now the federal government is to do massive amounts of data collection on schools, and not just academic data collection.
And there's so much money poured into sociology that it's not hard to understand why they make so much progress, because there's no limit to the amount of funding that they get and the grants that they get. And most people think it makes a big difference whether they're going to vote Democrat or Republican. Mm-hmm. But I think anybody who observes what's going on could look and they would realize that in most cases, it's the left that dreams up the social programs and the social takeover and the takeover of the lives of individuals, but they can't get it passed. And generally speaking, the social legislation goes through when it's a Republican administration. And one of the reasons that it goes, the left dreams up the social legislation, the right passes it as soon as they figure out how to make a buck on it.
Well, that certainly has been the process here to keep a flagging dollar afloat. They've come up with all kinds of government-private partnership dynamics in the last 5 or 6 years to, for instance,
in the grocery field, they get their food stamps because the grocery stores profit. When they have rent subsidies, they get the rent subsidies through in the Republican Party because the property owners profit. They get their medical business through because when it first started, particularly, doctors got big money for, and they didn't have to do charity work. Everything was paid for.
Yeah, there's always that ostensible purpose that lures us into this dangerous pen.
The Republicans go for it because there's money to be made. The Democrats go for it because they think they're doing wonderful for people.
And we end up with what becomes a left-right combined, and we call that sustainable development. Yes.
We'll do it if you let us make some money on it.
Yes, well, that leads to the new world order, and it creates total control over human action.
And off they go.
It eliminates free enterprise and free expression, and that's the life that we're bargaining for our children as we have this religion of sociology continue to advance its control over our lives and being.
But when you look at the history of sociology and all the people that were affected by Comte,
hold that thought for a moment, please,
sure.
Erica.
You might be wondering if Freedom 21 Santa Cruz is a liberal or a conservative organization. Are they left or right, Republican or Democrat? But you'll find that none of these one-dimensional labels applies to Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, nor to many of its participants. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz dialogue doesn't take place in a left-right, liberal-conservative dialectic, but on a spectrum between liberty and tyranny. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz participants include people from all political parties, religions, races, and backgrounds who are united in the pursuit of individual liberty and the protection of our U.S. Constitutional Republic. To find out how you can donate to or participate in Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, please log on to freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232. Do you think you're alone in recognizing that freedom is diminishing in your town and across the nation? Well, you're not.
Welcome back for some of our listeners to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show. While some of our stations continue out for a break, we're going to continue our discussion with Erica Carl on the subject of sociology as a religion. Erica,
yes.
Continue with where you were and let's understand more.
I got listening to you and I lost track of where I was.
Well, clearly you were talking about the Republicans and the Democrats.
Oh, yes. Well, I guess that's really pretty much covered. And if all of that money and all of that backing and colleges are big contributors to the sociological ideals, if that continues, there's no way out of it. We have to start thinking about getting rid of sociology, getting rid of sociologists, and not allowing the children to be trained in that kind of thing.
Well, let's start at this point. Some people are going to say, now, wait a minute. Sociology is a course, and it teaches us how to understand other people and be tolerant and recognize diversities exist amongst people. What would you say to someone who argues that sociology is not religious in its nature, if they are resistant to the idea that it is?
Well, I have pages and pages and pages of quotes from Comte where he says it's a religion, so I believe him. I do think that if somebody's going to work with politicians and inform them of the fact that sociology is a religion, I think they do need some of the quotes that I have. I think you've seen the ones in the Wisconsin Report. I have quite a few others that I think are significant that are organized in different ways. Some are organized according to different subjects. Some are organized according to the history, how it goes through the generations. But I think anybody who really wants to help and really wants to do it would have to read some of the quotes on Comte. And one thing I've done with some of my quotes, I wanted to send this to you, but I wasn't able to yet.
We have a break coming up in about 10 seconds.
So we'll be back here at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show. And Roy, we want to also talk about the Guide to Sustainable Development. We're back here with all our stations at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show, talking with our guest Erica Carl, who has described how the Comte's religion of humanity is precisely that. It is a religion. It may not have a supernatural belief, but I've seen your writings that the humanitarian priest's response to the fact that that humanitarianism is a religion is evidenced by the fact that a religion, would say the humanitarian priest, that religion consists in regulating each individual nature and in rallying all the separate individuals. Is that...
That's one of his definitions, and all of them are self-serving. He claimed for a religion so seriously that he wrote a whole book, Catechism of Religion. And the Catechism of the Positive Religion is in the form of a dialogue between him and this woman that he was extremely fond of. I think he was in love with her. She was a little too young for him. But he imagined himself training her into the Positive Religion. And she calls him father, and he calls her daughter, and he is also a priest. He called himself the priest of humanity. And the discussion is very, very difficult reading, but the quotes in there would assure you that definitely sociology, the religion of humanity, and the positive philosophy are all parts of one and the same religion, and sociology is definitely a religion. I want to emphasize that particularly because religion has been kicked out of the schools as far as Christianity is concerned. And I think if somebody wants to go a little bit more on the aggressive, which I think should be done, the fact that sociology is a religion should have kept it out of the schools in the first place if religion is going to be kept out of schools.
Well, and the whole issue of religion in schools points out the fallacy of creating a government school system in the first place with compulsory attendance and compulsory curriculum. There's no way you can avoid these kinds of conflicts that allow for, oh, a powerful group to take charge of the curriculum, and that's certainly what's happened. The sociologists have charge here in California. Every class has to have a focus on an environmental issue. You're taking math, you've got to have a focus on environmental, a sociological issue, all to satisfy
the environment, also because the sociologists want to control people through the environment. I mean, you can't do this because it's against the environment, or we're going to put you in this place and this is how you're going to have to behave. It's using the environment as a management tool is very effective, and they know that. Comte planned it that way. He was a brilliant man, you know. I read that when he wrote his volumes, and the Positive Polity is four thick, heavy volumes of about, I would say an average of about 350 pages. And it said that he committed his writing to mind and outlined what he was going to say to himself, and then he wrote it all out. You know, it was in his head, and it came out in one great big piece, each volume. he was a brilliant man. You can't deny it. And to plan something that's going to be as effective over the years as his sociology and religion of humanity have been, it takes a work of genius, but it's kind of an evil genius.
Well, when you say his work of art, I mean, this you know, this has been a work in demonic art, certainly.
You know, when he was a young man, he had so much of this in his head that he went out of his head. And he tried to commit suicide. He jumped into the Seine, but a soldier came along and rescued him.
And
sometimes I like to imagine what would have happened if the soldier had just let him go.
Interesting. You know, in your earlier appearance with us, you gave 14 points that summarized the positivist
the
social
goals.
Objectives. Yes, the goals. They may be worth reiterating here just to show and demonstrate how the program is designed to affect all that we do and all that we can be.
Well, now, in this series of six, it took six newspapers to six different issues, and I took each of these things and put them down as his goals and then followed it through the years to see how it had affected him. So do you want me to read them?
We get back from our break here in a few seconds. And for our listeners, go to the website at freedom21santacruz.net. Information keeps growing as to what's available for you to understand what the sustainable development, Compton-inspired takeover of America is all about. We're back here at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show. I'm Michael Shaw with Roy Avila, and we're here with Erica Carl. And Erica, you are about to give us the 14 points or goals that summarize the essence.
Well, these are ones that I picked out of Comp. There may be a few more that I missed, but I'll start with number one, which was the most important: replace Christianity with positive religion. Number two was abolish monarchy. Number three, institute and expand communistic principles. Number four, limit education and establish sociological control.
That's limit education. In other words, people are to be dumbed down, in the words of Charlotte Isherby.
And there are quite a few quotes in the newspapers that I compiled that show how they tried to limit education or how they succeeded in limiting education.
And then establish the sociological control.
That
gets the children acting as drones by the time they're out of high school.
And then I have a fifth one, control the environment to control mankind. Six, destroy moral authority and crush personality. Seven, control public opinion.
You know, and it wasn't very long ago that most Americans would have thought that was impossible. But it's hard for an average American looking at the scene in any objective way today and not conclude that, not likely, that public opinion is under control right now.
Absolutely. And
I mean, these jokes that you watch called cable news or network news. Just.
And I think there are enough recent quotes, too, on a lot of these. It goes through the years. And enough recent quotes for people to really recognize it when they see it.
I think so. Well, if you want to read some of these quotes, the Wisconsin reports from which...
Well, should I go through the 14 first?
Go through the rest of them, yes.
Eight, liberalize sexual attitudes and behavior. Nine, destroy the natural family and diminish the male role. 10, establish evolutionary theory and control the sciences. 11, promote global integration. 12, consolidate political power in the wealthy and the leaders of industry. 13, establish cities as humanity's centers of operation. And 14, phase out constitutional government and set up a world management system, now also called regional government or the New World Order.
Well, and you want to hear more on regionalism, check our archives just last week. We had a good show on regionalism, and we've had others in the past. These quotes that come from Compt and from six generations following Compt right up to today are listed in issues of the Wisconsin Report, which you can get by going to our radio page tonight and sending us an email, and we'll coordinate your receipt of a copy of the Wisconsin Report.
Erica, if someone had a student in school and wasn't aware of how the sociological folks have changed what's going on in the school, how would they? What would they notice that's different?
You mean different from when they went to school?
Yeah.
Well, I think anybody who is young enough to maybe have children and maybe from the baby boom generation, I don't think those people would notice that much difference because it's been going on since after World War II.
What are they doing with the kids in school now?
Oh, no. There are so many things. I got something here the other day. They have a new certificate program for a diversity practitioner. And they're supposed to teach diversity. Actually, what they're doing is telling children or adults, whoever is being trained for diversity, who their friendship should be and who they should like and who they should dislike.
If they're going to comply with the new system that requires the elimination of your personality and your ego, and with its replacement being simply this sociological spirit that does what's expected.
When I send you some more of those copies of the Six Generations to Serfdom, I'll send a few copies of one I did that I think is pretty important because it explains a lot of things. I called it Answers, Why Children Murder. And it's too complicated to explain it just on the air quickly, and I don't want to get into something that will puzzle people, but I think you'll find that kind of an interesting issue to read.
Well, I think so, especially here in Aptos, California, where we just had a very tragic circumstance that of that nature, and so those insights could be very timely here in the town.
I would have loved to go on someplace like O'Reilly and explain some of that, but you know, he gives you such short bites that I don't think it would be worthwhile even if I could.
Well, that's why it takes communications like this where people can sit down. Maybe they're driving in their car. You can always get CDs from Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. And
you need a longer time.
Intelligent discussion that allows the digestion of these notions, which once you get them, they're pretty easy to pick up and recognize. But getting onto the track that recognizes the reality as opposed to the illusion, as Dr. Stan Monteith always says, is a trick.
There's enough evidence and enough throughout the years that I don't think anybody should really deny that sociology is a religion because it's right there for anybody to see.
And would you go so far as to say that there's been a conspiracy amongst sociocrats to bring about this sociological society, the political, economic, and...
Well, I'd say that as long as you won't tell me that a conspiracy has to be secret, because it is no secret. It's been out in the open all these years for anybody who wants to see it.
Well, and it's become very easy with the web to do just that.
Yeah. Well, with the web, and I saw it when I was in college, but I didn't understand it. And I didn't begin to understand it until I read, I think it was the 14th edition of the Encyclopedia Britannica, and that edition explained the whole thing about Comte in a much shorter article than his books. And from then on, it wasn't a matter of deciding whether he was promoting a religion or constructing a new religion. It was a matter of seeing how everything else fit into it. And once you accept the fact that sociology is a religion, that sociology is trying to turn everybody into a one religion group, then you begin to understand what's going on.
Well, talk about how sociology has crept in today's churches.
Well, it started in the churches. Actually, now that's kind of a disheartening thing to me, because one of the reasons that sociology got such a good start in this country was because some of the ministers at that time were impressed with Comte. There was one named Theodore Parker who was very much a follower of Comte, and there were, even in the early days in the 1840s and 1830s, when Comte was just beginning to write, there were ministers and intellectuals in the United States who were corresponding with him and who liked what he was doing. So I would say that many of the churches started going for this humanitarianism very early in the game. And I think it's, you have less to condemn modern-day preachers for, because they didn't really have the type of knowledge given to them in their training that those early ministers had.
The early ministers... You're saying the circle had been broken before.
The early ministers thought they were pretty intellectual, and they liked Comte. And they promoted Comte. One of the things that helped very, very much to promote it was in the 1893, in conjunction with the World Parliament, the World's Fair in Chicago, they had a World Parliament of Religions. And they invited religions from all over the world, and the government sent out the invitations, religions from all over the world to come and talk about their different religions in Chicago. And many of the people who went to this World's Fair went to these various meetings and learned about all these other religions and were impressed by them. One of the people who was there at the World's Fair in Chicago was Annie Besant. Do you know who she is?
Yes.
She's in the Theosophy. And one of the first persons who was very much impressed with Comte was Madame Blavatsky, and she patterned much of her Theosophy after Comte's writings.
So it's been leveraged by some unsavory minds.
Others who went for Comte were Edward Bellamy, who wrote Looking Backward, and John Dewey, who was in the modern education at his time. So, actually, it's been building up with very, very strong promoters for at least 150 years. So, when you look at that, you think, well, many people today are just beginning to realize what's going on, and these people have had 150 years head start.
Well, that's why we like to say at Freedom 21, we may be way behind, but we got plenty of room to catch up. So,
well, we're running fast.
Yeah, we got to keep running faster, more effectively, and I see things like that beginning to dawn around the country. In fact, Stewards of the Range, you can find them at stewardsoftherange.org. Just this last week, circulated their petition to draw people's names for the repeal of the Endangered Species Act. Such a cornerstone to the environmental movement, which is such a cornerstone to the establishment of this new world religion,
that's
new
important.
World government. So this is a huge step to take, one that we've been harping on for some while. And you can go to stewardsoftherange.org and sign their petition to begin the clamor for the repeal of the foundation of what's really taking America down, which is
it's possible now to reach more people than was possible for a long, long time. I remember when I first wrote the Give Us the Young, several people called up Phil Donahue's program and said they should have me on. There's no way that would have ever happened.
That was, what, 1981, right?
Or earlier.
Or earlier, okay.
I had a different title to it before.
All right. Well, you've been on this track, and it's so important to have people who are as rooted as you are in the knowledge and background and really the historical watching of the development of...
Well, I was glad to know this, because it kept my children out of sociology classes. It kept them out of public schools. I wasn't going to have them in public schools. And also, all of our grandchildren have been kept away from sociology, which makes me very happy.
Oh, I'll bet it does. When I speak around the country, I have so many people come with such sad stories about their children and how they lost their children to a set of ideas, and they don't know what happened. And it's becoming clear to me that the families that can hold the line on this are families who acknowledge reality and aren't afraid of looking at this question such as the issue of whether sociology ought to be shoved down the
And I would say you have to be pretty diligent at it too, because the more that I hear about it, it's every, you know, you talked about it's in the educational system, it's in the church, it's all over, so you really have to be diligent.
Well, you come up with something and tell people about it, and then they'll change the name.
That's true, but you know, I think they're moving so hard and so fast with the sustainable development, the Agenda 21 protocols, that they are so vested at this point in that concept that the exposure of sustainable development, I think, begins to topple their house of cards, because when you get inside that temple of sustainable development, you're finding the Fabians, and you're finding just a state of permanent revolution, and you're finding...
Well, and many people are personally affected by it. And all of a sudden they wake up and say, what happened? And then they want to know.
Well,
So that sustainable development is an important one, but the years from, what is it, 2005 to 2010 are the years of, it's 10 years. 10 years, I think it's 2005 to 2015. Are the years of sustainable development in the schools. So while you're trying to inform people that they should watch out for sustainable development, the children in the schools, through their sociology and their social studies courses, are learning that they should promote sustainable development.
Well, I think most young people, if you talk to them today and you say, you know, in what way do you think you could make a difference in your world and your community? Many of them would say, well, I'll be a social worker.
That's right. That's true. I made kind of a list of things that people might do. I would say stay out of sociology and social science classes. Keep children out of those classes. Encourage others to stay out of sociology.
But hang on for a minute. If no one was taking the classes, the argument might be that we wouldn't understand what's happening, and we might become more vulnerable to the sociocrat takeover.
Well, I don't think that an ordinary student in an ordinary class would catch on to what's happening to him.
Okay, I agree with you. It's just too dangerous to put a young person into this mind-bending circumstance.
If you prepare them and say, tell me what happens, tell me if this happens, tell me if that happens, have you been asked to do something that you don't think is right? Have you been asked to join a social movement? Have you been told that you're supposed to join a social movement? You have to ask children what's going on in their classes.
And that takes real diligence on the part of the parent. Moms and dads need to recognize what's happening with their children when they drop them off, and you need to decide what's best for your child, the debunking that you need to do every day, or just keep them home and
figure
look, out a way
and check, I mean, you know, go to our website, go to these places that we, you know, go to the links, because it's there, it'll tell you what's happening.
Thing I think that is a good idea is to pick up some of the materials that the children are studying.
Right, read it, look at it.
Read
Erica,
the books, read the pamphlets.
A couple of calls. Are you ready to hear from a caller?
Sure.
Okay, Roger from Allentown, Pennsylvania is on the line. Hello, Roger.
Yes, good evening, folks. Hey, I'm guessing you had probably already seen, I think it was Rose Martin was the author of the book, The Great Deceit, The Social Pseudosciences. Might be like 40 years plus old by now.
There have been a few that I think I might have read that years ago. I know I read something about social sciences, and I thought, great, you know, somebody else is on it too.
Yeah, it was really an excellent book, except for like in chapters 3 to 4, where she swallowed some evolution, this naturalistic evolution. So she can only blame, I guess, the those folks for the racial ideas. And C.S. Lewis, I wanted to call this in a few weeks back when you had a related topic. C.S. Lewis had or borrowed, I'm not sure, this great line about referring to those of the humanist or social engineering tendency, is that they worship man in the abstract but hate him in the concrete. In other words, as they can make him, as they can make man, they worship him, perhaps as along the lines of the Nietzschean Superman. But as, and then as to hating him in the concrete, of course, that means as he is, with all his petty little problems and grubby dispositions and whatnot. So they just can't stand a sinful man, though they reject the concept, I guess. But and then the illusion of the perfectibility of man, shaped, of course, in their image rather than that of a righteous God. And God,
and you find that very much in sociology. We have to change men. We have to change the system. We have to make changes.
Yeah, and it's really applied Marxism is what it is, with that never-ending succession of non-sequiturs in an introductory sociology text. And God bless you all.
Well, thank you for your call.
Thank you.
And we have Ted from Georgia. Ted?
Got about a minute.
Good evening.
Yes. What is the lady's name?
Erica Carl.
I see, fine. I tuned in a little late, so I didn't get it. I certainly agree that that social sciences, as they're taught along with psychiatry, and, is a religion.
With the social science, psychiatry has, or psychology has changed too. It used to be you want to make the child or the person healthy in mind and body, and much psychology today is how to manage other people.
Or how to get them on drugs.
Now, could I say something?
Certainly.
There's a fine line of distinction. There's some, let's put it this way, there's some things, obviously there's some things involving personalities and so forth that are very valid observations.
That's true.
Hold that thought. We're going to be right back here, right, Ted, and we'll finish the question when we do. We're back here at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show, and continue with your question, Ted, of Erica Carl.
Yes, the fact is that, as I was saying, there are many observations that a person can make about personalities, that is, general observations, that are valid. And, of course, what they do is they take these things and structure them in such a way that it fits their program. And I had an interesting experience a number of years ago. I went to an assertiveness training class taught by a very eminent and reputable psychiatrist. It was a class at a school,
mm-hmm,
public school. And after the first coming in on the second session, we were waiting for the class to start for the professor to get there, who was a doctor. And the fellow next to me, who was retired, and he said, "This is a great class, isn't it?" I said, "Well, I certainly enjoyed the first session." I said, "Of course, I don't agree with the religious aspects of it." And he said, "Religious aspects?" He said, "There's no religious aspects to this class." And at that moment, the professor happened to come in, the doctor happened to come in, and he turned to him. He said, "Doctor," he said, "there are no religious aspects to this class, are there?" And the doctor just smiled, and he said, "There certainly are."
The truth bears out. Huh?
Yeah.
Yes.
So, and I'd like to know, and I think that I probably have a pretty good idea of the answer, but how do you see Freud in relation to Comte? I'm not familiar with Comte, incidentally, other than what I've heard on this program.
I see Freud more in relation to another psychology book I have read called Mental Physiology by William B. Carpenter, and it was written in the 1870s, and I learned more from that book than I learned from all my courses in college, and I think that Freud would be more on the comp side, because while Carpenter made everything very clear, Freud sort of mixed things up. He's got these id and ego and superego, and I don't really know what they are. Carpenter talked about unconscious cerebration, meaning thinking. Unconscious cerebration would be, an example would be, you go to sleep and you have a problem on your mind, and you wake up in the morning and you haven't been actively thinking about it, but all of a sudden the answer to the problem comes to your mind. And he would call that unconscious cerebration, like a clerk has been at work in your mind, filing things away and getting things organized. When you wake up in the morning, all of a sudden things become clear.
That sounds like a very valid theory.
Is what?
I say that to me sounds as though it's a valid theory.
Well,
in other words,
it's a wonderful book. If you could, of course, it's something you have to pick up on the internet.
Yeah.
And it's called Mental Physiology by William B. Carpenter.
All right.
And it's, I can't tell you how much I learned from that. It's just very, very, very valid today. And I think that Freud kind of mixed things up.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, well, thank you so much. I enjoyed talking with you.
Thank you for calling, Ted.
All right.
Well, Erica, we have a couple minutes left in our show tonight, and as we sort of wrap up this idea of Auguste Comte, positivism, his religion of humanity, how it has permeated our society through sociology and its various offshoots, leave us with something to go forward with.
Well, I think sociology is everywhere in our lives. It's everywhere in education. Comte had to start with a little bit and move on and grow and grow and grow. And I think that one of the most important things I would urge people to do is get their children out of sociology and do what they can to get sociology out of the schools and to encourage children who have an elective choice not to get into sociology. Actually, you know, social workers, a lot of them do pretty good work, but there's no reason why they have to take sociology in order to do the work they do.
Well, so they can indoctrinate the people who they're working for.
Well, it indoctrinates the people, but if you're going to help people and do an efficient job of it, there's no reason why you should have to take sociology.
No reason to be indoctrinated.
No, there's no reason. And I think that one of the things that you should be able to do is point out to Christians that when they support sociology, they're betraying Christ.
Boy, I guess that should sum it up for a whole lot of American people.
And teaching sociology in public schools is teaching religion, because it is a religion, and it is the teaching of religion.
Well, and it's remarkable that it is the sociologists that oftentimes are found crying the loudest for
religion out of the schools. That's right. They're the ones. And, of course, they're doing that because they want to have just one religion. And the strongest one, the one that's most dangerous to them, is Christianity, because there's a right and a wrong in Christianity. There's a right and a wrong in many other religions, but the right and wrong in Christianity is a knowledge within you that you learn the proper way to behave. And sociologists don't like this.
Well, the essence, it seems to me, too, of true Christianity is that Christianity stands against the totalitarian world.
And so
that's
when
right.
When you look at the attack on Christianity and ask why, and if you are to find that the answer is to further the objectives of the religion of humanity, then I'd say we all ought to get real nervous, because the religion of humanity will be run on top by men who do not have ordinary man's interests.
Now, a sociological religion can justify a lie, but the Christian religion can't justify lies.
Well, thank you, Erica Carl. Our time is up, and I'll look forward to reading more and talking more with you and spreading the word that you've done so well.
I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Erica, and have a good evening. And
thank you.
And good night. And,
good night.
Listeners of Freedom 21, check into our website. If you do not have your copy of the Sustainable Development Agenda, A Guide for Public Officials, order it now. Participate. Long live freedom.
The views expressed on tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show are the opinions of neither this station nor its sponsors. In fact, they're not necessarily the opinions of Radio Liberty or of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. The views expressed by the host are those of the host. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests are theirs. Whether you agree or disagree, please join in. To participate, you can call during caller segments at 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237. Or you can go to our online audience participation center at www.freedom21santacruz.net/radio. That's freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Now let's start advancing freedom.
Well, welcome to this evening's edition of the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show. I'm Michael Shaw. I'm here with my co-host, Roy Avila. Good evening, Roy.
Good evening, Michael. How are you?
Well, I'm excited. Tonight we're going to have a double-packed show. The first hour, we're going to delve back into the philosophical roots that really are governing and guiding our society today, not roots that many people understand and fewer people would support if they understood it. And then in the second hour, we're going to get down to the practical application. We're going to talk about habitat conservation plans, just another one of those strange applications of the Endangered Species Act that is wreaking such havoc upon American society and on private property specifically all across the nation. But to move along into our first hour, you know, tonight it's the continuing exposé on how positivist philosophy of Auguste Comte drives sustainable development. We're going to have a first-time guest, Mrs. Erica Carl, who will demonstrate how positivism accounts for the modern philosophical origins of the environmental movement, how it is really shaping the reordering of the family dynamic, and how it is the central idea for causing a centralization of economic and political power. We call it public-private partnerships, and so much more. You know, if we don't have an understanding of positivist philosophy and the origins of that through the philosopher Auguste Comte back in the early 19th century, we really will miss how it is that today's society is being driven. Our guest, Erica Carl, is an independent researcher and writer. She has a bachelor's degree from the University of Wisconsin. She's taught math and composition at private schools in Wisconsin.
For 10 years, she wrote a weekly column called Truth in Education for the Wisconsin Report. And she served as editor for the, education editor for that publication. Her books are Give Us the Young, Why Things Are the Way They Are, and a loose-leaf collection of quotes entitled Six Generations to Serfdom. She's a writer who publishes at News with Views, and she had an article published on October 17th. Entitled Shaping Your Future Whether You Like It or Not. Erica, are you with us? We don't have Erica up on the phone line yet. But
well, while we're trying to get a hold of her, you know, you were sharing with me before we got on this evening some of the things that were in this article, which when you were sharing them with me, it was almost scary how the writings of that time, what this guy was doing, is exactly what we talk about on this program and what's going on right now.
Well, it is. I mean, the subjects about which August Comte has written about is the life and the policy that we live with all the time today. Erica is with us. Erica, we've made an introduction of you to the audience with your background as a writer and educator. And welcome to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show this evening.
Thank you.
Well, it's going to be a pleasure, and I'm excited to hear the replays of this show myself once we're done here tonight. You know, you write, "How can shaping the future be so easy?" August Comte, who lived from 1798 to 1857, is the father of sociology and the religion of humanity. We're going to be right back here at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show.
Okay.
We're back while some stations take a commercial break with Erica Carl, our guest, and continuing with the quote from your recent writing on August Comte. You say that he devoted his entire intellectual life to plans for shaping the future.
Right.
He published a six-volume Positive Philosophy, his six-volume Positive Philosophy, and then he wrote his four-volume System of Positive Polity, more of a political application, and then his, which was four volumes, and then he wrote his Catechism of the Positive Religion, which capped off his career in order to instruct his followers about the methods to shape the future.
Yeah.
So, boy, we have done shows on August Comte, and tell us more, and tie some of the quotes that you have dredged up from the past, and show us how they apply to our society today.
Okay. Well, Comte lived from 1798 to 1857. And during the time of his youth, things had changed quite a bit. The Catholic Church in France had lost quite a bit of its power. Science was making great strides, and people were getting more conveniences, and life was getting better. Tom said, "This was all wonderful. However, we're going to have to get control of things again." And he reasoned out that in order to get control of people and of government and of the future, he would have to first get control of science. And in order to get control of science, he originated his own, what he called a new science, sociology, or social science, he called it. Then he wanted to get control of religion. And in order to get control of religion, he decided that he would form his own new religion, which he called the religion of humanity. His teacher, Saint Simon, had called it humanitarianism. If you look at very much older dictionaries, you'll find that humanitarianism, which sometimes even Christian ministers are happy to be called humanitarian, but the original definition of humanitarianism is the doctrine that denies the divinity of Christ. Did you know that?
No, I didn't, but I would presume that August Comte would also want to deny the spiritual base of any of the world's major religions.
Yeah, well, he was raised Catholic, and he disappointed his parents considerably when he went the way he did.
We're back here at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show with our guest, Erica Carl, and we're talking about the background of August Comte as he was raised and became an adult in the early 19th century.
And we said he wanted to get control of science and religion in order to control people and the future. And to control science, he invented sociology or social science, and to control religion, he invented his own religion of humanity. And he figured that people who believed in God would eventually all get together in one great Catholic Church. Those who didn't believe in God would follow his humanitarian religion, and eventually, over the generations, they would merge and we'd have a one-world religion.
So a one-world religion controlled by
sociology,
through science, and sociology controlling those sciences.
He was a brilliant man. In fact, some of the things that write about him say that he wrote whole books. He worked it out in his mind, and then he just sat down and wrote from beginning to end. He was probably he was a mathematician, really. And probably a genius at organizing thoughts about how to control the future, and he covered every subject. I collected a lot of these quotes, and I said, many believe the moral and educational deterioration of recent generations just happened. But research shows the decline was planned and executed intentionally. The goal is a totally managed world dictatorship to replace constitutional government and national sovereignty.
Now, did Comte address those issues?
Oh, absolutely. I divided my quotes into 14 different divisions, and these are the things that have to be accomplished in order to take over. I'm not saying there are only 14, but I have quotes from Comte to start out the first generation, and then I go through six generations, and it's six generations to serfdom. The first thing he had to do was replace Christianity with the positive religion, abolish monarchy, the third, institute and expand communistic principle, the fourth, limit education and establish sociological control. The fifth, and here's where you've been very interested, control the environment to control mankind and claim the land. Sixth, destroy moral authority and crush personality. Seventh, control public opinion. And he said that the public opinion had to be shaped and controlled, and that the world would be directed by public opinion. The eighth was liberalize sexual attitudes and behavior. The ninth, destroy the natural family and diminish the male role. Tenth, establish evolutionary theory and control sciences.
Now pause for just a minute. I think the listener ought to reflect on these first ten and ask themselves, so certainly if they're a regular listener of Freedom 21, if they have heard elements of the application of each of these concepts in the real world of today.
It's all there. And, you know, people get, or the sociological types get all upset when you talk about creation or evolution. Well, the reason for this is because sociology is based on what they call cultural evolution. And Comte felt that evolution was part of the basic principle, and he needed biological evolution in order to have something to base it on. And should I go on with the
yes, go
last
on with the remainder of the
promote global integration, invest political power in the wealthy and industrial leaders.
And today we call that public-private partnership.
Yeah. Establish cities as humanity's centers of operation.
And that's called smart growth.
Yeah, that's true. replace the Constitution with a world management system.
And that's called the United Nations.
Right. And all of these things he carried out and told people how to handle it. And there were followers of Comte who gave their instructions in the next generation and the next generation and the next generation. And today, look at sociology. It's in every college and every high school.
Well, I like to say that our whole secondary academic institution within America has really just become a Comtean academic experience. You go in with fresh ideas and you come out a sociologist, and that's whether you are dealing in physical sciences or majoring in maybe almost anything but accounting.
Well, accounting was probably closest to what he was a mathematician, so they probably get something there too.
Well, we'll move, as we move to this concept of triple bottom line accounting, which is being pushed by some serious accountants around this country, we begin to find that even accounting is afflicted by that Comtean disease.
Well, you know, in order to realize the goal of a world management system, you have to get the cooperation of people, whether it's ignorant or knowledgeable cooperation. And this is one thing they learned at Harvard. In order, if you're going to make changes, the best way to do it and to get cooperation is get the people involved in the change to assist in making the change. And many people don't realize how their involvement through some of the organizations they join and give sanction for them to be represented, how they are helping bring about this management system.
Well, in my conversations with you, you pointed out one glaring example of that, at least glaring in my mind, and that was the Chamber of Commerce.
We would not have a United Nations if it weren't the Chamber of Commerce.
Well, explain
and
that, please.
The Chamber of Commerce wanted the United Nations because there's an Economic and Social Council within the United Nations, and the Economic and Social Council has consultants from what they call NGOs. NGOs are non-governmental organizations. And it's getting to the point, these non-governmental organizations, the Chamber of Commerce, U.S. Chamber of Commerce, I should say, being one of the primary ones. And they consult with the United Nations and tell the United Nations what they think should be done. The United Nations makes it a world policy. It communicates that to the legislators of the various countries, and the Chamber of Commerce is an extremely, extremely powerful organization. Then Washington passes legislation that conforms to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce demands or requests, and oftentimes the local members of the Chamber of Commerce don't like what's coming forth. They have no idea that it was their own organization through the United Nations that promoted it, because it comes around indirectly. It's a nice setup for the world government promoters, because they can promote these things and be anonymous about it.
Well, it really is an application, isn't it, of the consensus process. It's really a higher tier application of the Delphi technique. Is that a fair statement?
I think so. I think so. You know, when they set up these local meetings for sustainable development, and I have attended quite a few of them, they always are looking for consensus. It's actually sometimes kind of fun to go to these meetings, because they can have 100 or 150 people there, and if they're sincere and looking for consensus, one person can ruin the whole thing, because if everybody doesn't agree, they don't have consensus. So sometimes they'll just break up the meeting and say, well, we'll schedule our next meeting for such and such and hope they can do better the next time. But one person can get in the way of the whole thing.
Well, we've certainly disclosed and discovered many examples in that mode, and of course, if that doesn't make sense to the listener, the best way to begin to understand that is read Bev Ekman's workbook called Understanding Group Manipulation and How to Counter It.
Well, that sounds like a good one.
You know, it's beautiful. It's about a 70-page handbook, and it'll describe what they do, how they do it, why they do it, what their goals are, and how it is that you can take this phony consensus process off its track. And it really is just by not falling prey to the group manipulation, the public opinion that Comte was so foresighted in understanding how to create a group mentality and how to use public opinion to monitor, guide, and really direct public action. And if you see through that and get down to the truth and the reason of what's going on, simply by asking reasoned questions, you can throw this phony and contrived consensus process off track. And every county in the country is going through this dynamic now, and that's why understanding group manipulation tactics becomes
and
so
you wonder
important.
How you wonder sometimes how can it show up in every country, in every county, and all over the country at the same time, not only all over our country but other countries that are doing the same thing. And when you realize how powerful is the Chamber of Commerce, and how often I would say Chamber of Commerce people are usually involved in setting up these meetings, you can begin to understand how it can be a worldwide situation.
Well, I think that's a beautiful application of taking what they always said in the 80s here in Santa Cruz, the global to local dynamic, and how it's been made to come true. And, you know, here in Santa Cruz, there's no question that the Chamber of Commerce's in our communities have been major players in doing that. We're going to be right back here at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show with our special guest, Erica Carl. We're back here at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz with our guest, Erica Carl, as we continue through the breakaway for some of our stations while they do some advertising. And let's just continue the conversation, Erica.
Before we move on, Erica, this is Roy Avila. You said something earlier about what was going on at Harvard. You know, Harvard, for many folks in this country, is one of the most respected institutions of higher learning. What went on and what's going on at Harvard?
Well, Harvard, for one thing, they tell people how to adjust for the change or how to get people to adjust for the change. But another thing that Harvard has is what's called the Harvard Management System. And starting in the 1940s, top executives from many of the largest corporations went to Harvard. I think it was a six-week training course, and they would learn this Harvard Management System. And the difference between what happened with the Harvard Management System and what the way things used to be, in the Harvard Management System, you're managing the men. Used to be, if you had a business, you managed your business. But it was definitely management of men. And when I've written various articles about the Harvard Management System, I usually abbreviate it with HAR for Harvard Management System. So I call it the HARMS system. Mm-hmm. And that makes sense, too. But there's a big difference between managing your business and trying to manage the people and their lives.
Well, managing men or managing people is the essence of seeking control over people, and I've always thought that there's nothing really more rotten than the effort to take control of the life of someone else, and that's really what we end up with the philosophy of positivism, is it not?
That's right. That was the total intent. The first thing that brought me to Comte, I was researching another person. It was actually Edward Bellamy, and it mentioned he wrote the book Looking Backward, which was a fictional design for a perfect socialistic system
that was going to take place in the year 2000. And Harb Bellamy had been strongly influenced by reading Comte. And I thought, well, I've got to find out who this August Comte is. And I went to my older editions of the Encyclopedia Britannica. It was the 14th edition, which was about 1906. And in that it said, this is a quote from Comte, "In the name of the past and of the future, the servants of humanity, both its philosophical and its practical servants, come forward to claim as their due the general direction of the world. Their object is to constitute at length a real providence in all departments, moral, intellectual, and material. Consequently, they exclude, once for all, from political supremacy, all the different servants of God, Catholic, Protestant, or Deist, as being at once behindhand and a cause of disturbance." And the whole article gave a great deal about Comte's life and his goals, and actually it would have been enough to convince me.
Excuse me, Erica. We're back here at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show for stations that have broken away with Erica Carl, and for the last few minutes we've been talking about how positivism, the philosophy of positivism, is the attempt to control all human action. And Erica has quoted Comte's vision in that regard, his vision for shaping the future of today. And she's referred to the author Bellamy, his first name I forgot.
Edward Bellamy.
Edward Bellamy in his book Looking Backward. Now, Bellamy, of course, was a very famous and one of the first Fabians in America, all of whom early research seems to indicate were drawn to Comte and his philosophy. So to the extent we have political action surviving today through people like old Tony Blair, the past chairman of the Fabian Socialist Society, we've got a political action organization that is rooted in the philosophy of Auguste Comte, and just gives us another reason to be concerned about understanding what positivist philosophy is and where it came from, and how it's affecting us today as this grand change that teachers talk about.
From the 1890s on, Bellamy's book Looking Backward was extremely popular, and being a fictionalized version, it was designed to affect the emotions of the reader, and it sold all over the world. And after the book came out, there were Bellamy clubs formed throughout the world. And one of the people who lectured on Edward Bellamy was Annie Besant of the Theosophical Society. And there's another person. I don't know how much you've talked about Madame Blavatsky and the Theosophical Society, but Madame Blavatsky was extremely much influenced by what Comte wrote. And part of the doctrines that she used to set up her society come from Comte and the ideas she got from Comte.
Erica, this is Roy Avila again. Who was Comte influenced by?
A philosopher named Saint-Simon, for one. And I think there was one called Condorcet. And, you know, you can go back farther and farther and farther. And I haven't really gone back that much into those people, because Comte gave me everything I needed to understand what was going on today.
Was there anything in your research, was there anything that happened in his life, or, you know, because usually when you read about these people, something happens to them, and then they react in a certain way to move in
another
direction.
Well, you know, he was born right after the French Revolution, and there was probably quite a bit of talk against the Catholic Church, and the Catholic Church was losing power. He decided he was much too smart to be a member of the Church, and he thought that he could invent a much better religion. Now, he thought of his religion as with all the system of the Catholic Church, but he wanted to get rid of this Jesus fellow. So, in his mind, the religion of humanity was Catholicism without Jesus.
Concept being a universal church, the meaning
that's
of
right,
Catholic.
Universal church.
Yes.
And that was the same concept that Blavatsky had and the followers of her side.
Wow.
It's a big complicated thing, but I find it easier to understand what was going on as soon as I found Compte, and it's a tree with a lot of branches, and you can hang things on every different branch, and they all are related to each other, and you can understand how they can cover so much territory.
And he had a comprehensive system to include a comprehensive management of humanity.
Well, now, each of those books of the Positive Polity is, I think the least is probably about 400 pages. I would say they're at least 2,000 pages of instructions how to set up the system. And then he also had that religion of positive religion catechism. And early he got a lot of followers through the system of, through the positive philosophy. So he had plenty of instruction for those intellectuals who wanted to read all his volumes and figure out how to do things.
Wow.
I think maybe the top sociologists now have access to the volumes, but they aren't easy to find.
Well, he's certainly not taught much in colleges today.
No, I took a sociology course. They never told me who originated it.
My. We're going to be right back at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show, and when we do, we're going to talk about Compte and environmentalism and what influence that may be having today. We'll be right back.
You might be wondering if Freedom 21 Santa Cruz is a liberal or a conservative organization. Are they left or right, Republican or Democrat? But you'll find that none of these one-dimensional labels applies to Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, nor to many of its participants. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz dialogue doesn't take place in a left-right, liberal-conservative dialectic, but on a spectrum between liberty and tyranny. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz participants include people from all political parties, religions, races, and backgrounds who are united in the pursuit of individual liberty and the protection of our U.S. Constitutional Republic. To find out how you can donate to or participate in Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, please log on to freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232.
We're back here before some of our stations return with us to continue our discussion with Erica Carl on August Compte. For the listening audience, 15-page summary of some classic quotes from August Compte and his various volumes is available to you if you go into our radio page. That's f21sc.net/radio. You can have a link to the article that was recently published by Erica, and it is a breathtaking read. If you're familiar at all with what's really underlying sustainable development and its movements that are cross-cutting our society, and read what Compte wrote nearly 200 years ago. You know, it may not be taught to the average sociology student, but boy, somebody is reading this stuff, and that somebody is taking these words to their natural conclusion and is bringing us this massive change in our society and around the world. You want to check out these quotes that Erica has compiled and has published in a recent article.
I think you'll find the one that I have first on the group that I sent to you. Environment controls mankind. In order to regulate or combine mankind, religion must in the first instance place man under the influence of some external power, possessed of superiority so irresistible as to leave no uncertainty about it. The great principle of sociology, of social science, is at bottom merely...
Hold that thought for a second, Erica. We'll be right back. We're back here at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show. I'm Michael Shaw with Roy Avila, and we're talking with Erica Carl on the positivist philosophy of Auguste Comte and its influence on today's society. And she's explaining how Comte's vision was that environment controls mankind, and that mankind needs the influence of an external power. In history, it had always been theology, and I think you're getting to the point where you're going to say he proposes that what controls mankind is the environment?
The great principle, he said, of social science is at bottom merely the full development of the primary notion of sound biology, the necessary subordination of every organism to the environment in which it is placed. A sound theory of biology thus furnishes the positive theory of religion with a foundation wholly unassailable, for it proves the general necessity for the constant supremacy of an external power as a condition for the unity of man, even in his individual life. So you see why evolution was so important to the sociologists.
You know, you said this guy was brilliant, and it's just amazing to read that and, you know, think about how long ago that was written and how it is exactly what's going on today.
Yes, and you, I'll read you some of the headlines I put on the quotes. Earth belongs to the great being. Human species and the animal races, the animal rights movement was predicted way back then, or... not predicted, projected, I suppose you could say.
Called for, in essence.
It's kind of a futurism, what he wrote. Human species relations with the animal races. The worship of plants to be restored. There you have your tree huggers. The sociological spirit has to be supreme, and that means supreme over all the other sciences.
And sociological spirit, what, means altruism, that you live your life for others, that you're really an object of community's use?
Well, he invented the word altruism. I guess you know that.
Yes.
And altruism means otherism, means that you don't think of yourself. You always think of others.
And what that really allows is for the ruling master to take control of you, because after all, your individualism's been crushed, and your use is only evident if you're sacrificial to the common good.
And total interference of everybody with everybody else's life.
Okay.
One of the important things is sociology is supposed to be the disciplinarian of science, and actually direct science what to do and where to go, and be the master science over all of the other sciences. And I don't know how other scientists in other fields can allow this to happen, and allow sociology to be in a college without a protest. I can't understand it.
Funding,
that's that's for sure. And it was the Rockefeller money that did a lot to build up sociology, especially in University of Chicago, where they started. And it wasn't until pretty well into the 19th century, I mean the 20th century, that sociology got into most of the colleges. And it was a struggle for them, but as soon as the money started coming, then they all started classes in sociology.
My Erica, we have several callers on the line.
Okay.
Okay. Let's hear from Will. Will from Missouri, who is a resident student of or scholar on Auguste Comte. Will, how are you?
I'm doing very well, Michael, and thanks for taking my call. Erica, wonderful broadcast, and I liked the article that you had with News with Views. I've got two questions. One of them, were you ever able in your research to come up with a reliable biography?
Of Comte?
Yes. like a Harriet Martineau or a Richard Congreve?
There are. I think I haven't thought about that too much lately, but, you know, he had this Clotilde DeVoe or something.
Yes.
And he was madly in love with her. She was his friend, but she didn't allow him to get any closer than that, and she wouldn't have married him, and she wouldn't have gone to bed with him. And maybe that's why he wants to change things for other people. If he can't have it, they can't have it.
Or at least he control everything around him.
Yes. But offhand, I can't think of any titles for you.
Okay. The other question is, in regards to his veneration of women as a result of the relationship with Clotilde, how do you see that coming down today in the various work that Harriet Martineau did here in the United States and in relationship to women's trends now?
Well, I think the entire women's movement was predicted. I mean, you can read Comte and you can predict political events, and he said he couldn't get his system to work without the cooperation of women. And if you're going to flatter women and call them goddesses, and that women should be worshipped, which is what he said, you can understand why a lot of these silly women follow into the women's lib movement.
And the social sciences.
Sure.
Well, I thank you for your comments, and I'll continue to listen. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
And we have another call, Roger from Allentown, Pennsylvania. Roger, are you with us?
Yeah, thank you very much, folks. I was just glued to the show, and I want to come back to this thing about legal positivism and the word altruism in that context. And what you said about worshiping women, it kind of reminds me, C.S. Lewis said that, you know, they worship man in the abstract, yet hate him in the concrete. That is how he actually is. And I think that's a very appertaining point. It's a big joke because in Rose Martin's, it's probably now 30-plus-year-old book, The Great Deceit, The Social Pseudosciences, she shows how Comte invented, really, sociology out of whole cloth. And having read through two or three introductory sociology texts, one has to be, if one has half a brain, you have to be struck by the succession of logical non sequiturs, one after the other. And I really like to call sociology applied Marxism, because that's, I think, a better summary term than anything.
I think sociology kind of preceded Marx, didn't it?
I don't know, but I think
sociology actually is much broader in its concepts, because it just touches everything.
Yeah, and it's so irrational, like I said, with the chain of logical non sequiturs. It's really a big scandal that you can actually get PhDs in that slop. And lastly, I'll hang up then. I wanted to ask, if you wanted to explicate further on this, is that the doctrine of legal positivism goes an additional step, that whereas law was regarded prior to this doctrine, and it's used by various jurists, if not explicitly, certainly implicitly, and that is, whereas law was used to ban or punish bad behavior, the doctrine of legal positivism has it to force good behavior. And I'll leave you at that to explicate, if you please, and God bless.
Thank you, Roger.
Well, Erica, do you have some reaction to Roger's comments?
Well, as far as the legislation is concerned, maybe not directly to what he said, but the sociologist and Comte wrote that legislation is no longer going to be made by the legislators. It's going to be made in what you call the sociological laboratory. And he said the legislative bodies will need to be continued, but merely to put the sanction of society on what has been drawn up in the sociological laboratory.
Well, just several weeks ago, we had a show on the Commission for Uniform State Laws and how each state's laws really aren't made by the legislators we elect, but are made by this commission that sits behind the scene, a group of lawyers.
I suspect a lot of that is also done at the universities like Harvard. And, you know, before the congressmen even go to Congress, many times they go to Harvard to learn how to legislate.
My. Well, I know here in California, if you're elected to a local position, you're sent to training sessions where you get your insights on how to implement smart growth policies and other sustainable development programs. So, you
learn policy instead of law.
Exactly. And that policy is the sociological outbirth that has evolved and grown out of this positivist philosophy, which is a very scary notion for all human beings, it strikes me.
Well, and when you realize how many, you know, you go to the library and get an encyclopedia of associations and realize how many associations there are, and there are now over, well, I would say there are over 2,000 who are now members of the United Nations non-governmental organizations. And when you join an organization that has policies, they're speaking for you in those policies, and they're all working with the United Nations. I mean, almost any organization you can join is connected to the United Nations, so you can see how, through leaders of these organizations, it goes into all the communities around the country, and people, it's amazing, you can go to one town or another, and everybody thinks they're original.
Well, that's certainly what we see with these visioning processes and the various guests we've had from all over the country talking about the notion of their local program, which they've been able to discover is just like the program that sits in a county across the state and sits across the state line at counties in other states, and it all ends up coming down either through federal agencies or organizations, NGO organizations you're talking about, whether it's the Chamber of Commerce.
And years ago, you know, in the local meetings years ago, they used to put butcher paper on the wall, and then they'd ask people for ideas. And you're not supposed to criticize anybody else's ideas, and they write them all down on the butcher paper. And many of them are very, very simple. And the people don't realize that anybody could think of the things that they're putting on this butcher paper. And the first meeting I went to, that somebody put something on and then everybody would applaud and make them feel good. And now, instead of the butcher paper, 3M makes regular boards.
Yeah, they're like big post-it notes.
Big, that's right. And they have pages that turn over, and you have to know that it's being done everywhere. It would certainly not be profitable to make these big boards for people who conduct their meetings.
Well, we have meetings like that all over this county. They've gotten a lot more clever because now they won't even open it for general comments or conversation. It's usually the facilitator now who takes nearly full charge before they put you at little individual tables, so that if they do have someone who understands the process and would make that information known to others, they've got them bottled up in small table, and then they can surround that table with the wandering facilitators to keep it all under control. But this process, I would just say this, though, that back when they would use the sheets here in Santa Cruz County, if you mentioned anything having to do with private property, they'd smile at you and go, well, that's a nice thought, and move right along without putting it on the board.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It wasn't that they took all ideas and put it on their little charts.
Well, and that process and that kind of training is everywhere, whether you go to a parent meeting to decide.
Well, that's using people to make changes so that they'll go along with the changes. And, you know, there are a lot of people who've never been in an important position in their life, and it's a ego boost for them.
Well, and you get that ego boost here and in many places by going to these so-called leadership courses where they teach you how to be a perfect follower and call you a leader, and you do the dirty work of the change agents that way.
Well, then you don't even really get to be a leader, because if it goes wrong, you can blame all the other people.
Well, you know, everything is leadership. It's a pyramid scheme. The guy at the top and the one underneath and the one underneath and the one underneath, and they all have a leadership position training their subordinates, but they're training them in a system that they have to be trained in before they use it.
And it's devoid of individual thought, because the criteria for this is that you accept group mentality, group thought.
Well, if you don't do what you're told, you're not doing it right.
Well, and you're off the system. We have another call, Erica, okay. Jeannie from Aptos here in Santa Cruz County. Jeannie?
Yeah, good evening. I have a question.
Speak up a little, Jeannie. It's hard to hear.
Okay. How do the Jesuit priests fit into this equation?
I didn't hear the question.
The question was, how do the Jesuits fit into this equation? Or do they?
I think that I haven't really gone into the Jesuit philosophy or any of the Jesuit teachings, and for me, I don't know that it's that important, because there's nothing I can do about it. I'm interested in the things that I can do something about. For instance, the Chamber of Commerce, I can see them, I can touch them, I can talk to them, I can warn people about the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and what they're foisting on the local groups, and it's something that I can really work with. In sociology, I can warn people, don't let your children take sociology, try to get away from the funding of sociology, but, you know, what can I do? If I'm going to study the Jesuits, whether they're in it or not, there's nothing I can do about it.
Well, that's fairly well said.
Can I comment on that? Because as I understand, they have infiltrated the Catholic Church and also other churches and other front churches that they have created. And their philosophy is very much what you're talking about. They do not believe in private property. And, of course, they said that Jesus Christ was a communist. So it does fit in very precisely
with the churches in the United States.
I
agree with you on that, because I had a personal experience.
Go ahead. We have another 40 seconds or so.
Personal experience with a boy I knew. I was on a date with him, and he said, Janet, what would you think if I told you I was a communist? And he said that being a communist, he had been told to become a minister. And I imagine if he was told that, there were quite a few others who had been.
All right. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Jeannie.
Well, as we come back from another station break, we've got a few minutes left in the show. And what we'll want to talk about is maybe a few more examples, Erica, of how positivism affects all aspects of the human endeavor and society. We'll be right back at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. We're back here at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show with our last segment this hour with our special guest, Erica Kyle, author and researcher and student of the positivist philosophy of Auguste Comte, an early 19th century French philosopher who really has outlined in incredible detail a scheme for change, the kind of change that we're seeing coming at us from all aspects here today. One of the areas that really fascinated me was Comte's call for the focus on ruling families, the concentration of capital, and the combination really of government and business interests. What can you tell us about that?
I was going to go in a different direction, and I had my mind on it.
Well, go ahead.
I was going to bring up the White House Conference on Children in 1970.
Oh, and Richard Nixon as president.
Yeah, and it gets into environmentalism. I'll read you some of the headlines, and you can stop me if you want to hear more. If a child is injured, the environment must be changed. Automobiles must be limited. Ecologists must plan communities. Get more land under public ownership. This is all from the President Conference on Children.
Wow.
And then on education for environmentalism, in the 70s, they had a push for futurism. I don't know if you've heard of that, but it was very, very prominent. And there was a book out on futurism, and it said students must be shocked and shaken. In short, if a teacher really wants to change student behavior through an ecology unit, something new and fresh will have to be offered. Students need to be shocked and shaken repeatedly. Their feet must be held to the fire until they cry out in protest. We use a number of science fiction stories to revitalize tired ecology units, and most of them hit the students hard. Now, isn't that a dirty trick?
Now, is this happening in schools today?
Probably.
Okay. There's certainly a lot that goes on in the school system. And
but this book was 1973, and I was so shaken after that I had to go and talk to my friend and practically be deprogrammed, because that meeting was horrible. It was a meeting of sociologists from around the country, around the Milwaukee area.
Well, we certainly know that here in California, every class now by state directive is to have an environmentalist element in it. You can be in a math class, it's got to have an environmentalist element.
And they scare the wits out of the kids.
We'll be right back here at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz in a moment. We're back here for the last few minutes of this interview with Erica Kyle on positivism and the philosophy that is... intended to shape our world. In the last segment, Eric has been talking about environmentalism, really dating from the 1970s, and the White House Conference on Children dated from 1970, and how it has been the policy, I guess you could say, from the federal government since that time, that children be indoctrinated with a different set of ideas about how the environment and human beings are to relate, and the order of things, really putting the environment ahead of human society and creating the control. Going back to the beginning of this show, the idea that there must be an external pressure placed upon society in order to gain the control over them, and the environment has been the agent of choice from August Comte on right here to today, and as we see that really begin to flower. Continue with that.
Well, I had a question because I know we're going to lose you real soon, and I want to get this out before you go. You know, many of us might know people who are involved in the Chamber of Commerce, and, you know, they may be well-meaning people, and you talked about, you know, being able to have an effect on things that we can do. How do you approach someone who might be in the Chamber of Commerce to kind of let them know what they might be being a part of?
I have not been too successful in approaching people in the Chamber of Commerce. You know, there are a lot of benefits for joining. I think they have insurance plans. I think they have many benefits that are financially profitable for the people, and they think they need it for the business. And I think that I like to talk mostly to the people who are receptive and want to learn.
Sure.
And it's very difficult. I'm not saying you shouldn't contact the people in the Chamber of Commerce and let them know what's going on, but don't be disappointed if they won't hear you.
Well, so many people who are members of the Chamber of Commerce do it because it's a local networking group, and it allows them to meet other business people and share dynamics that benefit.
And how can you look at all these nice people who are members of this nice organization and think that the national is not a good thing?
Well, it's the same thing with the American Farm Bureau, and it falls down to some of the local farm bureaus have the local farmers' interests in first front, and other farm bureaus, and certainly the national.
Well, I think maybe I'm going to interrupt you, because I think maybe talking to people of the Chamber of Commerce, don't tell them get out of the Chamber of Commerce. Tell them to change your local Chamber of Commerce and be aware of what they're doing and to object to what they're doing if it's not good.
Well, there's no question that the chambers in this county have, they've even had certain persons go through these chambers, and now they're off in other chambers. There's one fellow who went from here to Tracy and came from here from New Mexico, and he's just been an agent of Agenda 21 transformation.
Well, you know what I'm saying that's very interesting? Many former politicians are now going in to be heads of chambers of commerce.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, in the next hour, our subject will be habitat conservation plans, and the man who headed up the habitat conservation plan countywide in this county then became the Chamber of Commerce president.
Oh,
so it all does float and fit together. Once you
I might mention I have a couple articles on the Chamber on the News with Views.
And people can get that by going to newswithviews.com and finding you as an author and then clicking into the archive.
Check those chamber articles.
Okay, and that's a very worthwhile thing to do. And if you want to read Erica's summary of Comte quotes, go to freedom21santacruz.net. That's f21sc.net/radio. And right there, you can click right into this article that has formed the basis of our discussion tonight. I want to thank you very much for being with us and all the great research work that you're doing. And I'm so happy that you're spreading this word far and wide.
I want to thank you for making what Comp Plan better known. It's very important.
It is very important indeed. Well, have a good week recovering from Wilma down there in Florida.
Thank you.